Here it is!
From deep inside your audio device of choice.
Looks like Must Club.
Well, hello. Elon Musk's Get Out the Vote effort for Donald Trump has come under renewed scrutiny. Paid canvassers reported not knowing beforehand they were being hired to support the former president. Workers recruited by Musk's America PAC, my favorite PAC, to canvass in the battleground state of Michigan only discovered they were working for Musk to drum up voter turnout for Trump after signing non-disclosure agreements, according to Wired. Quote, I knew nothing of the job or much of the job description other than going door to door and asking voters who they're voting for, said a canvasser who was flown to Michigan from another state. Then after I signed over an NDA is when I found out we're for Republicans and with Trump, unquote. The canvassers also said they faced threats to their working conditions if they failed to meet the stringent door-knocking targets. The disclosure comes after the Guardian newspaper in England revealed serious question marks about Musk's voter turnout efforts in Nevada and Arizona, amid reports that up to 25% of reported door knocks in the state could be fraudulent. The Michigan canvassers were hired by Blitz Canvassing, a subcontractor that has so far been paid about $9 million by Musk to oversee his ground operation aimed at generating turnout in the state. Recruits reported being told to knock on 1,000 doors a week and to achieve a 17 to 22% engagement rate, considered a high benchmark for householders opening the door to strangers. And that's, they have to meet that rate to avoid having to pay for their own accommodations and flights home. He's the richest man. Yeah, but what's going to happen? They're going to stop paying for those motel rooms, and then you're going to end up having to pay for it yourself, a manager is heard saying in a recording obtained by Wired. Quote, you can't do that with no money, unquote. The canvassers also reported being driven to neighborhoods to carry out door-knocking expeditions in the back of a U-Haul van without seat belts instead of rental cars, which had been promised. And speaking of stiffing, Donald Trump faces a growing pile of missed payments for rallies and legal bills during his current bid for the presidency. While campaigns crossed the political spectrum of occasionally missed payments, according to Al Jazeera, including Bernie Sanders' campaign in 2016, Trump's failure to meet payment deadlines stands out due to its long-term pattern. Trump owes cities across the country for costs associated with staging a rally, like security costs, public safety expenses, resources, and in some cases, facility rentals. One of the bills he owes is to the city of Prescott Valley, in Arizona. City officials told Al Jazeera Trump's campaign has not paid the full costs of his local rally 2 years ago. City says it still owed $25,000. A city spokesman told Al Jazeera they'd asked the campaign to pay up front for the most recent rally held earlier this month. Far from the only outstanding bill Trump owes in the swing state of Arizona, the city of Mesa invoiced the campaign for an October 2018 rally. Payment of $64,000. No success achieved by its attorney. We believe the Trump 2020 campaign should reimburse our city for those taxpayer dollars, said a spokesperson for the city of Mesa. El Paso says the Trump campaign still owes it $569,000 for a rally in 2019. Much of which is supposed to go to the city's police department. The city hired a law firm in 2020 to send notice of these back payments. Efforts to pressure the campaign have yet to be successful. St. Cloud, Minnesota told Al Jazeera something similar. Trump campaign failed to pay an outstanding invoice due earlier this month, $208,000, covering overtime pay for first responders and relocating road construction to accommodate his motorcade. Lebanon, Ohio, an outstanding invoice from 2018 still unpaid. City has yet to receive $16,000. Spokane, Washington. Trump campaign owes it $65,000 for a rally way back in 2016. That's including 955 overtime hours for the city's police force. Tucson, Arizona, his campaign still owes more than $81,000 for a rally back in 2016. And Grand Rapids, Michigan, the campaign owes the city $32,000 for its rally this past July. The balance, which was due a week ago, includes overtime pay for first responders. Well, when you stiff your illegal alien workers for building your triumphant skyscraper way back when, what do you expect? This week, an apostrophe made the news when President Biden issued a statement critical of the comedian. His website describes him as world-renowned comedian. So, of course, you've heard of Tony Hinchcliffe. I said Tony Hinchcliffe, who was denouncing Puerto Ricans at that big rally at Madison Square Garden a week ago. And as I say, President Biden criticized that affair and referred to something as garbage. He says it was that supporter of Trump he was criticizing as garbage. But there wasn't an apostrophe in his statement, so it went out with supporters, plural, instead of supporters with an apostrophe. The White House later added the apostrophe to the transcript, despite objections from the transcription office inside the White House. It's like the difference between something belonging to a nut and nuts. Hello, welcome to the show.
You see, I gotta make it for you.
Hey, we all got work to do. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show from New Orleans. And speaking of workers getting screwed, news of our freedom-loving friends in the land of 4,000 princes, Saudi Arabia. As Saudi Arabia pushes ever forward with its massive and unprecedented construction projects, the death toll has reportedly been staggering. In a new documentary from ITV's Channel 3 in England, the secret is aired as a female journalist goes undercover there to learn the Saudi secrets. The reporter discovers an extremely inconvenient truth during the course of the multi-trillion dollar Vision 2030 project. It includes its in-progress 100-mile skyscraper called The Line. Don't step out of the line. More than 21,000 foreign workers on the project have died. The majority of the people who have died while working on Vision 2030 come from South Asian countries like your Bangladesh, your India, and Nepal. And those who are still alive told the anonymous undercover reporter in stark terms how horrendous their working conditions are. Worse than mine. Despite some half-baked attempts at labor reform, migrant workers in Saudi Arabia are subjected to extreme exploitation that borders on slavery. You remember slavery? You remember it had borders? During the documentary, some of the workers tasked with building trenches and railway tunnels in the futuristic city of Neom said they are treated like beggars and forced to work 16 hours a day. Under such conditions, exacerbating by the Saudis' bid to host the 2030 World Cup in a soccer stadium that just hasn't been built yet, accidents are common. Given the secretive nature of the kingdom, however, it's impossible to know the true extent of how many injuries and casualties have occurred. News of the gruesome death toll on the way to the future city follows prior reporting about the tens of thousands of indigenous people who've been forcibly removed to make way for the 100-mile-long city. As the BBC revealed earlier this year, Saudi officials were instructed to kill any non-compliant members of the Huwaitat tribe they had inhabited the desert region. They lived in the desert. What were they expecting? News of our freedom-loving friends, the land of 4,000 princes, Saudi Arabia. Now to a more contemporary subject.
Artificial intelligence has got it all going on. AI, it's the way to be. Smarter, faster, never takes a break. AI, give your life a shake. From your phone to your home, it's everywhere. Making life easy beyond compare. Artificial intelligence, oh so bright. Making tomorrow's world out of sight. AI, it's the future today.
Alaska State top education official relied on generative artificial intelligence to draft a proposed policy on cell phone use in Alaska schools. That resulted in a state document citing supposed academic studies that don't exist. The document did not disclose that AI had been used in its conception. At least some of that AI generated false information ended up in front of the State Board of Education. Policymakers in education and elsewhere in government rely on research. The commissioner's use of false AI-generated content points to a lack of state policy around the use of AI tools. According to the Alaskan Beacon, public trust, they point out, depends on knowing that sources used to inform government decisions are not only right, but real. The department spokesperson first called the false sources placeholders. They were cited throughout the body of a resolution published on the department's website. Later, the state education commissioner said they were part of a first draft. The commissioner said she realized her error before a big meeting, sent correct citations to board members who adopted the resolution in question. However, mistaken references and other vestiges of what's known as AI hallucination exist in the corrected document, later distributed by the Education Department. Dateline San Francisco tech behemoth OpenAI has touted its artificial intelligence-powered transcription tool, Whisper, as having, quote, near-human-level robustness and accuracy, unquote. This is from the AP. Whisper, they say, has a major flaw. It's prone to making up chunks of text or even entire sentences. According to interviews with more than a dozen software engineers, developers, and academic researchers, those experts said some of the invented text, known in the industry as hallucinations, can include racial commentary, violent rhetoric, and even imagined medical treatments. Welcome to the future. Experts say such fabrications are problematic because Whisper is being used in a slew of industries. I'll take one from this slew. To translate and describe interviews, generate text in popular consumer technologies, and create subtitles for videos. More concerning, they say, is a rush by medical centers to utilize Whisper-based tools to transcribe patients' consultations with doctors. This despite OpenAI's warnings that their tools should not be used in, quote, high-risk domains, unquote. What's the extent of the problem? A University of Michigan researcher conducting a study of public meetings said he found hallucinations in 8 out of every 10 audio transcriptions he inspected. A machine learning engineer said he initially discovered hallucinations in about half of the over 100 hours of Whisper transcriptions he analyzed. A third developer said he found hallucinations in nearly every one of the 26,000 transcripts he created with Whisper. Longtime listeners to this program may recall that Gary Marcus, an expert and skeptic, or skeptort, has been talking about hallucinations in AI on this program for years. An OpenAI spokesperson said the company continually studies how to reduce hallucinations, appreciated the researchers' findings. OpenAI incorporates feedback in updates of their models. While most developers assume that transcription tools misspell words or make other errors, engineers and researchers said they had never seen another AI-powered transcription tool hallucinate as much as Whisper. And speaking of hallucinations, news of the godly. Thousands of Catholics in Belgium have demanded to be de-baptized amid fury over the long history of clerical sex abuse and cover-ups in the church. Between July 1, 2023 and June 30 this year, 14,000-plus people asked to be removed from the baptismal registers, a sharp rise on the average number from previous years of about 1,200. No reasons are given for the requests. The church told local media it believed that disgust at the abuse and the cover-ups of it was decisive. That's from the Telegraph newspaper in England. The figure was revealed in the church's annual report. 218 reports of sexual abuse recorded during that 12 months, almost 5 times higher than the year earlier period. De-baptism formalizes a person's abandonment of the church. In Belgium, it's on the register of baptisms. The more than 1,000% increase in de-baptism requests come after a documentary was broadcast in Belgium with interviews and testimonies from sex abuse survivors. Well, why let them talk? Meanwhile, in Ireland, the Irish government has been urged to extend the scope of an inquiry into historical child abuse in schools to include corporal punishment including a practice known as leathering. I said leathering. Survivors of physical assault in Catholic schools, according to The Guardian, have complained they were told there was no scope to include corporal punishment in an investigation into sexual abuse. That investigation was announced in September. They've now called on the government to review that decision, saying the beatings by teachers at such schools were an hourly occurrence for pupils in the 1960s and 70s. Those are the most painful decades in which to be beaten, and that the abuse had a lifelong impact. Generations of children in Ireland grew up with discipline imposed by wooden canes or leather straps used for 6 of the best or 12 of the best, referenced in the number of times they'd be hit. This was all covered in a documentary on RTE TV, a sister of the radio network that carries this broadcast, RTE. One person told the documentary he'd written to the Inquiry when it was launched to urge it to investigate physical abuse by religious orders thought to have been widespread 50 and 60 years ago. I get the bombshell from them that, you know, you weren't sexually abused, so we don't really want to know about your case, said one. Others talked of the beatings they would get as a part of lessons. Quote, it was not so much a daily occurrence, but an hourly occurrence, class after class. Abuse was meted out in primary and secondary schools. Victims question why it was never taken seriously by school managers, often members of religious orders. And church leaders who fail to take action against pedophile priests are a, quote, further source of evil for victims of sexual abuse and should be removed from their post. That's from the Vatican's Child Protection Commission. In its first report on a scandal that's embroiled the Catholic Church for decades, the Pontifical Commission for the Protection of Minors said the church was still failing to ensure that clerical sexual abuse cases were dealt with adequately. It also criticized the Vatican office charged with processing complaints of being slow and secretive. Well, if you're going to be slow, you might as well be secretive. The commission was set up by the Pope way back in 2014. Its first report published this week focused on church protocol in 17 countries. A month after the pontiff was rebuked over the church's handling of abuse by Belgium's king. There's that Belgium again. News of the Godly, copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And speaking of scammers and stiffers, must be a crypto winter coming, or here already. In September, Donald Trump announced his new crypto exchange, World Liberty Financial. Now, according to Fast Company, registered investors can officially sign up for the whitelist, assuming they can avoid the scammers. On X, World Liberty Financial's announcement is swarmed with false replica accounts. These fakes steal the account's profile photo and verbiage, but promote false links. X has been a historically advantaged platform for Trump, but even he can't escape the app's perpetual influx of scammers. What service World Liberty Financial plans to provide remains unclear. In his initial announcement, Trump merely commented on how crypto would transform the financial system before introducing the outfit's leading entrepreneurs. CoinDesk, that's a outfit that covers the marvelous world of crypto, acquired a white paper detailing the plan for World Liberty Financial, built on the DeFi platform. Not DeFi, DeFi. And the Ethereum blockchain. Beyond that, exactly how WLFI will operate and what they will even do remains a mystery. And also from Cointelegraph, the front-end websites of several online crypto apps were compromised end of last month after attackers injected malicious code into an update of a popular and widely used animation library. It's a crypto winner, ladies and gentlemen.
Direct from Mar-a-Lago, where confidential documents line the walls. It's your favorite ex, but soon to be ex-president with another edition of Trump Social Audio, brought to you by Trump Beer, the beer that made Mar-a-Lago famous, although it's not brewed here. And this is a special edition just before the big election that I'm destined to win, unless they cheat, which they will, which we will challenge from here to January 6th and beyond. But here with me is one of television's most psychological hosts, Dr. Bill. And on the phone, the man who stands for journalism and excellence, like the Statue of Liberty stands for statues, Rupert Murdoch. Rupert, first of all, congratulations on your recent marriage. Number five, right?
Well, who's counting? I mean, I'm 93. I'm not counting anything at this point.
Except for Tuesday, right? I mean, you're still putting very evil and stupid people on your network, even now, which I don't understand at all, because Fox News was always a favorite in MAGA world until...
Donald Fox News puts on Democrats occasionally just to show how foolish they are. That's a good thing, like marrying a 22-year-old. Actually, she's 67, but once again, who's counting?
You know, I'm counting. And right now, I'm counting on my in-studio guest, Dr. Bill. I didn't know he was coming, but I'm welcoming him as if I invited him. You know, I stopped paying Dr. Bills years ago. But for you, I make an exception.
Well, Donald, if I can call you that, I tend to share your opinion of much of the medical profession.
Well, especially since you were kicked out of it, which was so unfair. Right, Rupert? I mean, nobody's heard of anything like that.
Oh, I think I've heard of it.
Donald, I think in this final spurt before the really final splat, I think people want to know a little bit more about, as I do, about the real you. When you go off the clock, what makes you tick?
Well, Dr. Bill, there's a thing about me which maybe you don't understand. A lot of people don't understand about Trump. Because, in any case, when I go off the clock, that's when the ticking stops. Like nobody's ever heard before. Just no ticking. No ticking. Rupert, how come that's not on Fox and Friends, the ticking stuff? I've never heard that on Fox and Friends. I'm wondering if they're really friends, or even foxes.
Donald, your place in the national drama just might end this Tuesday. Fox News has to go on forever, or at least until my beloved sons die. So I'm going to keep it on an even keel, and I'm old enough at this point to say that at this point your keel just might not be even.
See, this is what I was getting at before I quite got to it, Don. Are you letting your anger maybe get the best of you? I mean, you're rich.
Rich like no one's ever been.
You're famous. Yeah, you've been president. Yeah. Maybe your anger has stopped being your best friend. Maybe, just maybe, you need a month at the Dr. Bill house. It's tax deductible.
That's great news for people who pay taxes. One final question for both of you, or one of you, and then the other. There's been a lot of talk this week about garbage. Rupert, what does garbage mean to you?
Garbage is people you fire.
If that isn't great, maybe I don't know what great is. Dr. Bill, you probably have a more medical idea, even though you're not allowed to practice medicine or anything.
Well, another word for garbage is refuse. And another way of saying that is refuse. That's the power of garbage.
Too deep for even me. I'm being told we're out of time. I hope to God they just mean this podcast. Thanks to Rupert and Dr. Bill. I'll talk to you after I win, and I know you'll be talking out of the other side of your mouth then. And for now, thanks for listening.
Trump Social Audio is also brought to you by Trump Bread. Whiter than any bread you've ever seen. So long. Gosh. Well, at least it's fresh. From New Orleans, this is Le Show, and now... News of the Olympic Movement. Produced by Jim Ebersole III. Well, the president of the IOC, the International Olympic Committee, Thomas Bach, has encouraged African countries to express interest in hosting the Olympic Games starting in 2036, going onward, according to Pulse Sports Kenya. This is emphasizing the continent's potential and the IOC's reforms to make hosting more affordable, you know, for the African countries. He explained the continent needs to be proactive in declaring interest so that the IOC can consider them in upcoming events. He explained the IOC's looking to develop host countries in terms of infrastructure and making the budgets affordable so that national Olympic committees don't feel the pressures of hosting the games. Sounds appealing, doesn't it? Not to Barcelona. The 1992 games there still hailed as one of the most successful ever. The Spanish city declined to repeat as host this week. It currently faces the pressing challenges of tourist massification, a word invented apparently by InsideTheGames.biz. The initiative was subject to a vote last week. The Barcelona City Council elected against initiating procedures for a formal proposal to become the future home of the Summer Olympics, as it was three decades ago, to rave reviews. Local lawmakers opted against the Catalan capital's involvement. The short-lived initiative was presented by the right-wing Popular Party, but lacked enough backing among the 41 seats. Sports councillor David Escudé told the session the idea of holding the Olympics in Barcelona in a not-too-distant future is, quote, absolutely inopportune and absolutely illogical, unquote. Yeah, but what about other political sides, such as the Socialist Party, currently in power, or frequent left-wing allies, voted against? Right-wing Junts, who also favors a break from Spain, abstained. Barcelona 92 is remembered fondly in the Mediterranean city as it helped reshape the metropolitan area, which had long been forgotten by various administrations. It generated business revenue and helped open minds on a creative and political level, showcasing the wonders of Spanish culture to the world. Those Olympics were also celebrated as fans in attendance enjoyed the warm welcome and friendly weather of the Catalan coast. Such success, however, turned the area into a global brand and a flaming hot tourist destination that ballooned to mammoth proportions, and the past benefit has now become a considerable nuisance for its longtime residents, many of whom have been forced to abandon the city center, which has become overrun by foreigners. Maybe they need Donald Trump. Come clean it up. The Olympics, ladies and gentlemen, it's a movement, and we all need one. Every day. What the frack, unable to keep up with the growing number of leaking and erupting wells in Texas oil fields, the Texas Railroad Commission, which regulates oil drilling in the state for no conceivable reason, has asked lawmakers for an additional $100 million in emergency funding, equal to about 44% of the agency's entire two-year budget. The agency's executive director sent the letter after the commission filed its annual budget request in August, according to the Houston Chronicle. This report from the Texas Tribune said the agency's $226 million budget request did not include enough money, quote, to protect the groundwater and the environment, unquote, from increasingly common well blowouts. There are approximately 140,000 so-called orphan wells in the U.S. More than 9,000 of them are in Texas. These are abandoned wells, inactive for at least 12 months, no clear ownership. Somebody walked away. When left unattended, orphan wells are prone to blowouts that spew contaminated water onto the surrounding land. Experts said the routine industry practice of injecting fracking fluid produced water into underground rock formations contributes to the problem. That'd be a new job category for Hollywood, a water producer. That water that comes out of the wells is laden with chemicals it collects underground, including your hydrogen sulfide, a toxic and deadly gas. Not a nice gas. Speaking of gas, now the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Dateline Palo Alto, California, a Tesla chemical spill is under investigation there. Officials say more than 900 gallons of a solution, not a problem, were recovered from storm drains. The Office of Emergency Services said some kind of chemical used to cool the Tesla AI supercomputer was released into a storm drain and the gutter. It apparently happened to a mistake. Crews were draining the Tesla system. The city released this statement, quote, in hindsight and with appreciation for the input received since, staff recognizes we should have made public notifications sooner. We apologize for our delay in making notifications, unquote. The city says in addition to cleanup, the cause is under investigation. Storage of sodium hydroxide requires a city permit. Tesla did not have one. Well, they're in Texas now. Dateline New Mexico, the lead elections official in Torrance County, New Mexico, is apologizing, assuring voters their ballots will be counted after workers mistakenly mailed about 140 absentee ballots without return address labels. CNN's Newsnight descended into chaos and acrimony Monday night after Trump surrogate Ryan Gerdusky directed an Islamic-phobic attack on fellow panel guest Mehdi Hasan. After a commercial break, Gerdusky was no longer on the panel, and host Abby Phillip said, quote, first I want to apologize to Mehdi Hasan for what was said at this table. It was completely unacceptable. When we get this discussion started, you'll see that Ryan is not at the table. There is a line that was crossed there. It is not acceptable to me. It's not acceptable to us at this network. Dateline Silicon Valley, with 1 week until the election, a year-old video showing Tara Srikrishnan egging a Cupertino resident's car has resurfaced, moving some to raise concerns about her run for state assembly. She egged the car of a Cupertino resident who she felt had made offensive comments regarding her Indian American background roughly 5 years ago. Those were old eggs. A surveillance video obtained by the San Jose Spotlight, a local newspaper, shows Srikrishnan in a puffy jacket and sunglasses lobbing eggs at a car parked in the driveway at about 10:45 in the evening. The egging followed her unsuccessful run for Cupertino City Council in 2018. That race is still contentious. She said the incident had nothing to do with that. Cupertino is, you know, where Apple lives. You don't want an egg an apple, do you? Srikrishnan said everyone has things they wish they could take back. This tops her list. She apologized, said she's held herself accountable for the mistake. This from England. From the Diocese of Chelmsford of the Church of England, the Reverend David Tudor, rector of Canvey Island in the Diocese of Chelmsford, has been prohibited from ministry for life and removed from his post as rector by the Bishop of Southwark's Disciplinary Tribunal, which examined two complaints under the clergy discipline measure against David Tudor. The penalty imposed followed a recent full admission of guilt to disclosures of serious sexual abuse that were brought as a disciplinary complaint by two complainants. This relates to the time when he was a priest in the Diocese of Southwark, includes serious sexual abuse involving a 15-year-old and a 16-year-old, says the Right Reverend Dr. Gooley Francis DeConnie. I'm deeply sorry for the profound hurt and harm David Tudor's behavior has caused. I welcome the tribunal's decision to remove him from office and prohibit him from ministry for life. It has taken enormous courage from those who came forward to report David Tudor's abuse. I am extremely grateful to them for doing so. I know this lengthy process has caused considerable distress and anxiety, and distress that could have been avoided, at least in some part, if David Tudor had made his admissions before now. Unquote. And while we're dealing with religious apologies, this from Virginia Theological Seminary, quote, as we remember those who have gone before, it's an appropriate moment to share an apology that I issued on Saturday, October 26. I did so in my capacity as Dean and President of Virginia Theological Seminary. It was a formal apology to all former LGBTQIA plus students who found their time at Virginia Theological Seminary a difficult, painful, hard, and often brutal experience. I did so as the current holder of the office responsible for the seminary. The stories I've heard from LGBTQIA plus students are deeply disturbing. Often the prejudice was overt and cruel. The context of the apology was the restoration to ordained ministry of Reverend Harry Stock. He arrived at VTS in 1975 when the seminary was not an hospitable place for the pain and tears, the seminary issues an apology. There are others who found VTS a hard place. I pray those alumni will make the journey back, enjoy their two free nights accommodation, and feel a place that has changed, unquote. Don't forget the fries. The British government has apologized for the death of a 9-year-old girl who's believed to be the first person in the UK to have air pollution listed on her death certificate after a decade-long battle that highlighted the risks that vehicle emissions pose to children in low-income communities. This is from the AP. The apology was part of a settlement announced this week in a lawsuit filed by the mother of Ella Adu Kisi Debra, who developed severe asthma just before her 7th birthday and suffered severe seizures before she died on February 15, 2013. The government also made an undisclosed financial settlement. Ella's death came after the so-called Dieselgate scandal, when Volkswagen obscured the true level of emissions released by its diesel-powered vehicles. Research by the Royal College of Physicians later showed about 40,000 deaths can be attributed to outdoor air pollution each year. In the UK, the burden falls most heavily on low-income communities close to busy roads and other major sources of emissions. Ella grew up just 80 feet from the South Circular Road, a major conduit for traffic along the southern edge of central London. The singer Loomis has issued an apology after her botched performance of the national anthem. It went viral because it was on a live C-SPAN broadcast. She opened a debate held by the Free and Equal Elections Foundation featuring third-party candidates. She did a rendition of the banner midway through a performance, which was also aired on radio and online. Radio? Her voice audibly cracked as she belted the song's classic high notes. You know, like the rock is regular. I effed it up. Can I go back, please? She begged before a voice off camera could be heard informing her it was a live broadcast. She quickly jumped back into the song, finishing out her performance to applause. The clip has made rounds on social media. Several viewers likening her flub to former Black Eyed Peas star Fergie's rendition of the anthem at the 2018 NBA All-Star Game. Loomis took the online mockery in stride. She addressed, quote, all the craziness. First off, I would like to apologize to the Free and Equal political team for this mishap. And from the bottom of my heart, I wanted to apologize. And I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to mess up the national anthem. And I wanted to thank you guys for giving me a chance and believing in me. She went on to share, performing the anthem has long been something she's had concerns about singing. Quote, I was always scared I was going to fail. And then I did. And the world's seen it. So I just wanted anybody out there who's seen that you can change anything negative into something positive. Reminiscent of an apology not covered on this show earlier this year, country singer Ingrid Andress slammed for her rocky performance of the anthem at the 2024 Major League Baseball Home Run Derby. I'm not going to bull you all, she said. I was drunk last night. I'm checking myself into a facility today to get the help I need. I'll let y'all know how rehab is. I hear it's super fun, unquote. Dropbox has fired about 20% of its staff. Its second round of layoffs in less than 2 years. CEO Drew Houston said some parts of the business are booming, but cuts were needed where the company had overinvested or underperformed. 528 are gone. Quote, as CEO, I take full responsibility for this decision and the circumstances that led to it. And I'm truly sorry to those impacted by this change. Unquote. Houston, who's keeping his job. Quote, again, I know this is incredibly difficult and unwelcome news to everyone leaving Dropbox. I'm deeply grateful for everything you've done for our company and our customers. Now clear it. No, he didn't go on. Last year, Dropbox laid off 16% of its staff, blaming the effect of AI. It still turned a profit that year and has made a big bet on its AI search tool. No hallucinations there, I presume. Apologies. I presume too much. The apology of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And now, finally.
He's not a general.
He commands no troops.
He's not an inspector.
He peeks at no stoops.
He's an inspector general.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Deadline Washington, Boeing. They're not in enough trouble already, are they? They overcharged the Air Force nearly $1 million for spare parts on C-17 cargo planes. That included an 8,000% markup for lavatory soap dispensers. This is according to the Pentagon Inspector General, reported by the AP. The Defense Department's auditor reviewed prices paid from 46 spare parts on the C-17 from 2018 to 2022. 12 were overpriced. 9 seemed reasonably priced. It couldn't determine the fairness of prices on the other 25 items. The Office of the Inspector General said it reviewed the soap dispenser prices after getting a hotline tip. Quote, Boeing, we're reviewing the report, which appears to be based on an inapt comparison of the prices paid for parts that meet aircraft and contract specifications and designs versus basic commercial items that would not be qualified or approved for the use on the C-17, unquote. Meaning, I guess, ordinary soap dispensers wouldn't work on the plane? The C-17 Globemaster is one of the military's largest cargo aircraft. It can carry multiple military vehicles, large pallets of humanitarian supplies, or sometimes hundreds of people. They might use soap, but, you know, in a different way. The Air Force flew C-17s nonstop for 2 weeks during the hectic, that's the description here, August 2021 withdrawal from Afghanistan, evacuating more than 120,000 civilians fleeing the Taliban. Did they need soap? Since 2011, the U.S. government has awarded Boeing more than $30 billion in contracts to purchase needed spare parts for the C-17 and be reimbursed by us, U.S. Newsom Inspectors General. Ladies and gentlemen, copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this week's edition of the show. Back next week at the same time, over these same radio stations, and at a time of your choosing on the audio device of your choice. Hope you'll be back here then. A tip of the show chapeau to the San Diego desk, to Pam Halstead, to Thomas Walsh at WWNO New Orleans for help with today's broadcast. The email address for this program? What, you don't use it? Your chance to get Cars I Talk t-shirts. You don't wear those? And playlist of the music heard here on, as well as a lot of stuff to see, read, hear, and forget. All at harryshearer.com. And speaking of apologies, I'm on X at the Harry Shearer. This show comes to you from Century Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of WWNO New Orleans, flagship station of the Change is Easy radio network. So long from the Crescent City. And go do your work.